Okay, so let's do a couple of small points here to wrap up this Talmud Torah sugyas, and we'll move forward. Bezras Hashem Sunday we'll start the topic of Kibud Avim. So the Gemara here has a lengthy discussion of how you're supposed to figure out which spots are which in the Sefer Torah. And it's a little bit iffy, you know, in terms of our Sifri Torah don't match up with this. So the Gemara basically says in the end of it, Amarle inu baki b'chaseres v'yiseres, anan lo bakiin, right? So we're not bakiin b'chaseres v'yiseres, and therefore we don't have this ability to count up letters and numbers in Sefer Torah. So the question is, what are the ramifications of not being experts in the chaseros v'yaseros of a Sefer Torah? Right? I know you're lied to as children, most likely, and they tell you that the exact Sefer Torah that you have in the Aron Kodesh is the same Sefer Torah that was, you know, given at Har Sinai, which isn't true either. But the right, Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a discussion at what point the Sefer Torah was written down exactly. But either way, it was at some point at the very, very end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, he wrote a number of Sifrei Torah, and who wrote the last few words of the Sefer Torah is a discussion in the Gemara. But the bottom line is, even in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, they used to have three Sifrei Torah that they kept, which they would use to check new Sifrei Torah with, and they even sometimes had discrepancies between those, and they would go majority rules. So it wasn't always easy to keep the Sefer Torah exactly meduyak with all the other writings of Sefer Torah. So our Sefer Torah we're not bakiyin bechaseros uviyaseros. That's the statement of the Gemara, right? What ramifications that has to Bible codes? You can decide for yourself that the Bible codes based on the letters being exactly right. You know, so I don't know the answer. I don't know if they would do a Bible code with Svarim that were more meduyak, less meduyak. But bottom line is that our Sifrei Torah are not completely meduyak when it comes to the letters. Yes?
Is it possible we're missing words as well? Or it's like only
so it doesn't sound like we're missing words. But that's the poskim discuss. What would then passel a Sefer Torah under these circumstances? Right? What would passel a Sefer Torah under these circumstances? So they say in the name of the Mechaber that anything which deviates from even one letter from our Mesorah, l'charchila, we would passel the Sefer, and we would not read from such a Sefer, l'charchila. Basically, it's a machlokes. We're not getting into it now. It's a machlokes in the Rishonim, l'halacha l'maisa, whether a Sefer Torah shechiser os achas is possible to begin with. If a Sefer Torah is missing one letter, so is that a kosher Sefer Torah or is it a puzzle Sefer Torah? So it's a machlokas. So we are machmir lechadchila and mekel bidyevit. Meaning, if there is a Sefer Torah which is considered halachically missing something, then we paskin, you're not allowed to read from such a Sefer lechadchila. However, if you already did Kriyas HaTorah, or if you're halfway through Kriyas HaTorah, and then somebody notices that there's something wrong with the Sefer Torah, so we don't automatically start again from the beginning. We paskin, you're allowed to pick up from where you left off. You're allowed to pick up from where you left off because b'diyeved, we paskin, the Sefer Torah, shechiser os achas, is kosher. And therefore, we're makil when it comes to that. But the Ramah goes further and suggests that maybe you don't even have to put the Sefer Torah back. You don't have to take out a new Sefer if it's chiser os achas under certain circumstances, right? The Ramah quotes here, I'm in the middle of the source here on the page, v'had emotzi en acher, dafka shenimtza ta'us gomur. That has to be a real mistake. Ava mishim chaseros v'yiseros eim ahotzi acher, she'ein sefer Torah shalanu meduyakim kol kach, shenemar she'ha'acheres yiyeh yoser kosher. Right, he quotes that from the Agur, Piskei Ma'ari, Riyaz, Ma'aril, etc., etc. So he says, how do you know that if you take out the next Sefer Torah, you're actually upgrading? Maybe this Sefer Torah is more correct, and you're downgrading when you put this one away, and you take out a second Sefer Torah. Maybe it's actually something, you're going from a better, more meduyak sefer to a worse sefer. Right? Let's say we get some of the examples we saw, the word Aharon, right, could be written with a vav, without a vav. It doesn't change anything in the meaning of the name. It's a name, Aharon, right? So it doesn't make anything different. So in our Sifrei Torah, let's say for argument's sake, in this particular place, it's written without a vav. It's written without a vav. And in this particular sefer, you find it's written with a vav. So you say, well, I know it's written without a vav, so I should put this sefer away and take out the sefer where it's going to be written with a vav. Yeah, but maybe it's really supposed to be written without a vav, or vice versa. We don't know. And therefore, there's no reason to say this sefer is more or less pasul than the next sefer, even if the standard way to write it is with or without, depending on, in other words, if this sefer that you have sitting on the bima right now doesn't conform to the standardized text that we use for our Sifrei Torah, that doesn't mean you automatically put it away, because you have to assume that you're not necessarily right about that. We don't know that we're right when it comes to our sefer. If you look at the Magen Avraham, so Magen Avraham tries to qualify this statement a little bit. Magen Avraham says, Kigon avosenu chaser vav. He takes the word avosenu. Sometimes you can write avosenu with a vav, you can write avosenu without a vav. Right? So too, with a yud, without a yud, it doesn't necessarily matter. Okay, got it. Avotosh and ishtana kriyas hateva. But let's say you're going to read the word differently. Even if it doesn't change the meaning. Right? I never, for the life of me, understood this. Why in the Torah you can have a word keves and you can have a word kesev? I don't know why the word is like that, but it's the same exact word. It doesn't change the meaning, as far as I know. Anybody know the difference between a keves and a kesev? Right, it's the same word. So he says, if the Sefer Torah is written keves and it's supposed to be kesev, sheyadua shehutos, and you know that this is not the standard way of writing it, aval pishi yesh lo pirish echad motzien acher. He quotes from the Shlo HaKadosh that he says that even though you know it's the same exact word, you translate the word kesev and the word keves the same, if it's written the wrong way in your Sefer Torah, you have to put that Sefer Torah away and take out. So it's ironic. There, you have the same amount of letters, and it's worse because they're out of order than, let's say, the word avosenu missing a vav or having a vav, which is, you know, it's you're messing up the number, and neither one changes the meaning at all. But the Magen Avraham says, if the word is written wrong, it's the wrong word. It's the same meaning, but it's the wrong word. We don't do synonyms in the Torah. We do the right word. So if it's the wrong word in the Torah, then you have to replace the Sefer, and you have to say that that's called the Sefer Torah that has a tos in it. Mashenkin, if it's missing a letter by Chaseros v'Yiseros, then you don't have to replace the Sefer Torah according to the Rambam. And he quotes the Tshuvas Maram Lublin, Kasuv de'im kasav rechava b'makam rechavo mikre shinui. So he says, sometimes, like for example, the word he and who are written the same in the Torah. So sometimes you also have the word rechavo with a hey at the end, because it's really a cholam above the hey, right? Or above the beis, however you want to look at it. So there's a cholam there. So you could read it correctly, but nevertheless, it's spelled differently, like ahalo with a vav versus ahalo with a hey. Mikol makom gam Shom yesh tam ledavar lama kasev behei kamosh kasev Rashi shom mashenkin kan ad kan l'shon. He says, therefore, you have to change the Sefer Torah because there's a difference in how you understand the pasuk, whether it's written with a hey or whether it's written with a vav, right? So too, for example, sometimes things you wouldn't correct a shliach tzibur, you wouldn't correct the balkore for, you would still put the Sefer Torah away for. For example, if it says Haksuva b'sefer hazeh, or hazo, or hazos, right? So technically, you wouldn't really. I mean, in those cases, you might correct. But if he says the word zeh instead of zos, or zos s instead of eight, that's a bad example. Zeh and zos are written two different ways. Technically, if the guy would say zos instead of zeh, you wouldn't correct him. Why? It doesn't change the meaning. It's just bad grammar, right? In other words, you're changing the modifier. Is if you say b'sefer haTorah hazeh, so the word zeh is modifying the word sefer. Sefer is a male word, right? And zeh is modifying the sefer. If you say b'sefer haTorah hazos, so you're saying that the word zos is modifying the Torah. So when you're speaking about the Torah, you say zos. You say you're talking about the sefer, you say zeh, right? You have that sometimes. Pasuk by pasuk. It's not in the case of Sefer HaTorah. I'm trying to think where it is. But for some reason, I remember Rashi kept cueing in on sometimes it says Zeh, sometimes it says Zos. Yeah, he says, because when it says Zos, it's modifying this word in the sentence, and it's modifying, right? Sometimes it changes. But if you would read it wrong, you wouldn't correct the Shliach Tzibur because he didn't say anything to change the meaning, right? But if, by the way, good luck ever being in a shul when they don't correct you on that. They will absolutely correct you every time on that, even though it's not meant to be corrected. Right? Masha Ein Kein, for example, was it last week's Parsha? The word, it kept saying the word, oh yeah, at the end of Parsha's Matos, they had the word Banu, right? Banu, even at the, a lot of times, when you know what I'm talking about? A lot of times you have at the end of a Pasuk, they'll shift the accent of the word to Mila'el, right? The word Banu means what? They built, right? What does the word banu mean? In us or with us, right? Totally different word. So if you looked carefully, I remember I was listening for it, so it was done correctly here. It was a freilich. He's not here anyway, so if he did it wrong, I could still rip on him out, but he did it right. So he did it correctly, but a lot of times I've heard cases like that where the Balkori will naturally shift the accent of the word to banu, because most words, when you read it at the end of a pasuk or you read it in the middle of a pasuk, it will shift the accent to the first syllable, right? So, but the reason you don't do that here is because it changes the entire meaning of the word. It's a 100% different word, spelled the same, looks the same, but since one's accented banu, right? One's accented, you know, banu. Two unrelated words. So you can't shift it. You hear what I'm saying on this? Right?
You have to say the pasuk over again on this one?
What?
You have to say the pasuk over again on this one?
If the guy would say the word, if the guy would read the word banu, so then you would have to, it's a full-fledged correction. It's not, you have to correct him. So, but if you would read zeh for zos, or zos for zeh, you don't correct him. But a lot of times they correct it when they switch the segol and the komats, right? So they'll say shem chom v'yefes, right? Instead of yofes, it's the same exact word. It's like mashav aruch amorad ageshem versus amorad agashem. Same word, just the question is where is it in the sentence? It switches. So a lot of times you switch, the word aretz versus eretz, same thing, right? They'll switch the way it's pronounced based on where it's located in the sentence. But what?
You
for sure don't correct. I mean, every time they correct, but it's not correctable. It's not, you didn't change the meaning at all. It's just grammatically, there's a reason why you're supposed to do it, you know, one way in the sentence, but it's not, it's like S and Ace. You don't change the, you don't correct
what
for that.
What's the downside of correct?
You're not supposed to give the guy a hard time. It's actually considered a little bit of halbanas panim to correct the shliach tzibur. So you try not to correct him if you can avoid it. No, really, the Rambam shita was you correct on everything. Reb Chaim understood the Rambam shita is you correct on trup. You know, so if he reads the wrong tamei amikra, you correct him on that. But that one thing that people have a hard time looking out for, and myself included, even though I'll spot it two psukim later because I'm not a quick. Not a quick study in general. I read slowly. I do things slowly. So a lot of times you'll see he read the word, he accented it wrong, and he made a real mistake. And nobody picks up on it. And then the fake mistakes people pick up on because they're easy to spot. There's one that I've heard many times in Paris Kisisa where like you accent the word wrong, it changes everything. You know, whatever, not for now. But just a quick example in basic Hebrew, right? What is the word Ratza mean? She wanted, right? What does the word ratza mean?
She
runs or ran. It's both, right? So it's not the same word at all. So if you change the accent from ratza to ratza, you did that would be a correctable mistake. You hear what I'm saying? Ratza is running, related to the shorish of larutz, right? As opposed to the shorish of ratza is past tense for wanted. Yeah. So I said this over one morning. I said that you really should correct it for what I don't understand why. There's two Eishel Avrams. You guys know the Eishel Avram? There's two Eishel Avrams. There's the Eishel Avram, which is the primogodim on the Magen Avram. The Magen Avram is on every page of Shulchan Aruch Orach Chaim. So there's a commentary on every sifkatan of Magen Avram written by the primogodim called the Eishel Avram. And there's a second Eishel Avram, which is known as the Eishel Avram Mibuchach. It's a separate posek, Rav Avram Mibuchach. He wrote his own commentary on Shulchan Aruch. It's like a small little commentary in the margin. The Eishel Avram Mibuchach says, even though it really does change the meaning of the word, you don't correct for a mapike. I don't know exactly what his logic is. I think maybe because you can assume he really meant to say it. You know, if I was running the world, I would correct for it, but I am not, and I don't. You know, so that's I think everybody's relying on that Eishel Avram. But if it's blatant, you know, if it's blatant, I think you really would have to correct for it. Meaning, yeah, see, the problem is we're not medayik. Once in a while, you get a Baal Kori who's like out of this world good, and he. When it's a chirik chaser and a chirik malay, you hear the difference. So isha is spelled aleph yud. It's a chirik malay. You realize it's e as opposed to like a half. You know, e. I can't even do it when I'm trying to do it. You know, but it's like a half a chirik as opposed to a full chirik. You know, so it's a isha. You know, that they'll say it right, but they can actually do it without being annoying and slow. You know, so yeah, that's the key. Anybody can be really, really, really slow and get it all right, but that guy's not coming back next week. You know, but to actually be able to do it with some pace is very impressive if you can pull it off. Right? As opposed to the word that means woman is isha. But is there a dagesh inside the shin for the word woman? I think there is. So it's hard. Like you're supposed to say a dagesh inside the shin, but not a mapik inside the hay. It's a very hard word to differentiate. So like the first one is like a full e sha, like that, and the second one is e sha. You know, you say the shin more, but I can't even do it when I'm trying to do it. It's very hard to do. So yeah, I don't know. So if it's blatant, you really should try to correct it. But again, we try to minimize our corrections, you know, to not give the Baal Kori a hard time. Yeah.
So are we Yossi in general? Like, have we lost so much in the Sorah, like how to pronounce words, like, you know, gimels and stuff like that?
So I don't think we lost that much Masorah how to pronounce words. The pronouncing words is different than what we're talking about now.
I mean, like, when we get to, like, a tougher stuff, like, it comes down to, like, which way did they pronounce it back then?
Well, there have been studies done using transliterations from Greek and Roman, I think. I once heard a talk from Dr. Lyman where he actually said, you'd be surprised how many Milas and Chisronos every single major pronunciation has. He says there are milas and chesronos to all three major pronunciations that the Jewish people use. But if you look, for example, in Rabbeinu Bachai and the Ramban, they talk about, and Parshas Vayera, I think, they talk about the kamatz and the patach being different. And they say there, Lashon Chol versus Lashon Kodesh, that when it says Adonai, that's really Lashon Chol. That's how we knew, that's how Chazal knew that when Avraham was talking to the Malachim and when Lot was talking to the Malachim versus we knew when he's talking to Hashem. That's why the Drashas Chazal is Gedola, Hachanas Azorcha Mikabolas Pnei Hashchina, because Avraham asked Hashem, please wait. You know, is that true? That's the way we learn it? I think that's how we learn it. Right, so the Hashem, because it's spelled with a noi, right, and Rabbeinu Bachai writes not the way we Svaradim say it. Right, he says I say it with a patach, but because that's my Masorah. But he says you see clearly that that's wrong. You know, so, but I don't think he changed the way he was saying it. But he, but he's clear that he knows that there's something wrong with that. Meaning, there's a reason there's a patach, there's a reason there's a segel, there's a reason that all these, you know, different vowel sounds are different. There's a difference between, I mean, some people, I mean, some people who are makbid to do different sounds for every, I mean, there's different sounds within each nikud. There's, you know, there's a kametz katan, which sounds more like a halfway between a cholam and a kametz. And, you know, even a lot of Sephardim and a lot of Israelis who are not makbid to differentiate between a kametz and a patach, they are makbid for a kametz katan, that they, that they say it more like a cholam than they do it for a... So Rav Kook has a tshuva about that, where he writes, that's why you have a chiyuv to follow your Mesorah, and you can't say Shema in a different Mesorah. And that's why, that's one of the great ironies of Israeli society today, that Rav Kook was so, he has like three or four different tshuvas where he writes, Ashkenazim are not supposed to say Kriya Shema and Davin in Sfaradit, and vice versa. Right, and he, didn't catch on. But certainly, even those who are not so makbid, they'll say for Ashkenazim when they pronounce the Shem Hashem, they should say it with a pot, with a komatz. And some say, yeah, that's only if that's the way your father said it. But already, if you've been living in Israel for three generations and your father says it in a Sephardi pronunciation, so that's the same thing as if you would have picked up and moved from Germany to Spain back in the 1300s, where you would have been following the Minhag HaMakom, and you would have started doing things in Sephardi pronunciation also. But no, okay, it is. By the, you know, in the Haredi places, they still are makbid to pronounce, they speak Ivrit, but they learn and daven in Ashkenazis. Because now, once you get politics involved, then forget the whole thing already. It's, then it becomes not much less of a halachic issue. But by the regular Dati Lumi, I think they just pronounce it, everything in more Sephardic, except for the rolling resh. The Sephardim, I think even, I don't know, what is it? Sephardim in Israel, they say the guttural resh, or they say the guttural resh is an Ashkenazi thing. The guttural resh, like European Jews, they talk about Tere, right? They don't say like Torah. Like Sephardim will say what they call it, Shiniyim Chikiyim. It's the tongue up against the palate or the teeth, you know. But in Israel, the Sephardim, they all went over to the guttural resh. They still do the.
I think most of them do Ashkenazi.
Right. So I'm saying, besides that, you know, if you have a few different people here and there, you get a Taimani cab driver, you know, he's still rocking the cheses and the ions, you know. So, but overall, you know, most of them switched over to the standard Israeli pronunciation. Okay, I mean, it's hard to say you're not following Minhag Avos once you're a second or third generation Israeli already, and that's the way it's been pronounced. You know, so I don't know. It's a tough call. All right. Anyway, getting back to this. So that's the sheet of the Ramah, that you don't have to put away a Sefer Torah. You don't have to put away a Sefer Torah if it's missing a letter, which doesn't change the word at all. But if it changes the word, says the Magen Avraham, you have to take out a new Sefer Torah and replace the old one. So the question is, how does this affect the mitzvah of Ksivas Sefer Torah? How does this affect the mitzvah of Ksivas Sefer Torah? So there are basically two and a half opinions that I'm aware of on this. That I'll explain what I mean in a second. So you have the sheet of the Shagas Aryeh. I didn't give it to you on the Maamar Kolmos, but the Shagas Aryeh claims, he starts off with a premise. He says, very few people write Sifrei Torah anymore. So not so many people writing Sifrei Torah. So nowadays, I think there's been a bit of a renaissance, and more people are writing Sifrei Torah. But overall, you know, in the times of Shagas Aryeh, very few people wrote Sifrei Torah. People were also dirt poor in the times of Shagas Aryeh. Shagas Aryeh was known as being extremely, extremely poor. There's a famous Litvisher story about the Shagas Aryeh. You know the story with the sugar? So they said, when the Shagas Aryeh was hired for a Rabbonus in a particular place, so the minig was that the Rebbetzin would host a tea party for the women. So he was so poor, the mamish never drank tea. They didn't know from it. So she bought a bunch of tea, and you know, they set it up for the people, and they had it. So after the whole thing was said and done, so the Rebbetzin asked one of the, you know, the Chasheva Balabastas, how did it go? And she said, oh, it's very good, but usually around here we also have sugar with the tea. So she's like, okay, I didn't know, I'm sorry, next time we'll try again. So next time she hosted a tea party, so she took out the tea, and then everybody drank the tea, and she's like, oh, and wait, I also have sugar. And she puts out the sugar afterwards. She didn't even realize people put it in the tea. Like, that's how poor they were at the time. So it could be that's one of the reasons why nobody was writing Sifrei Torah, is because they didn't even know what to do with a cup of sugar. So Shagasari writes that there's been a tremendous rifyon in the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, and that's because there is no mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah anymore. Couldn't be that if there would be a mitzvah d'oraisa, meaning that people are poor, but everybody makes sure they get their dalad minim for a sukkahs, and everybody makes sure they have a kosher shofar for Rosh Hashanah, and people have, you know, their megillas and whatever else they need to pay the money for. They manage to scrounge together the money when it comes to mitzvahs. Nobody's saying, oh, I don't wear tefillin because I'm very poor. Everybody gets a pair of tefillin. But why don't they write Sefer Torah? It must be that because of our Gemara, that we're not Pekin b'chaseres v'yiseres, you can't be Mekai in the mitzvah k'siva Sefer Torah anyway. And therefore, what are you bothering to write a Sefer Torah for if you're not going to be Mekai in the mitzvah? You know me'ikara that your Sefer Torah is puzzle, and therefore there's no mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. Yeah. So Rav Moshe makes that taina, I think. Rav Moshe says about that Shagasari, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He says that first of all, we don't know bevados that everything we're doing is wrong. Right? So you say, Sveika derais el chumra, and you should try to at least write a Sefer Torah. So that's where you have the sheet of the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer has a few tshuvas where he talks about this. Chasam Sofer has a tshuva, I gave you part of the tshuva over there, where he says, the Shoel asked him, how come we don't make a bracha on Ksiva Sefer Torah? How come we make a bracha on Ksiva Sefer Torah? So, for the Shoel's, if you read the whole tshuva, it's not such a long tshuva. If you read the whole tshuva, the Shoel suggested the reason we don't make a bracha on Ksiva Sefer Torah is because it's a long mitzvah. So when would you make the bracha? You'd make the bracha when you started. So you'd say, or whatever, and then you start writing, Bereshis Bara. Nobody writes Sefer Torah that fast. Bereshis Bara Elokim. So 6 months later, you finally were Yotze the mitzvah. You can't do that. So must be the reason we don't make a bracha on Ksiva Sefer Torah is that there's no good time to make the bracha. There's no opportunity to make the bracha, right? Masha'en kein, other mitzvahs, you can make the birchas mitzvah right before you do the mitzvah. Over la'asiyah, so, you know, you're about to pick up the dalet meaning. You say, baruch d'Hashem l'kein ha'melcholam, asher gishan ha'zvanu, al netilas lulav. Fine, pick it up. Done. Or if it's in your hand, but you're holding it upside down, or you should have kavanah lulatzis, whatever, all the different suggestions that the Rishonim make. But here, since you can't be Mekayim the mitzvah in 1 second, it's going to take you 6 months, can't make the bracha before you start writing it, because you're going to take a break for the day. Let's say even if you're a really hard-working sofer, and you write for 8 hours straight. So you wrote 8 hours straight, so how much did you really write? I don't know the answer, but I don't think you wrote even a whole parsha. Maybe you wrote a whole, I don't know, anybody ever watched a sofer write a Sefer Torah? It takes a long time. So you can't make the bracha then. So the Chasam Sofer says, nah, that's not the reason. It's not a good enough reason to not make a bracha. He says, I'll tell you what you would do. Let's pick it up in the tshuva inside. Avo mikol makom lo nir elizeh, da'al kolponim yichtov ad le'enei kol Yisrael, v'shom yamtin v'yagia kol ha'sefer. So what would you do? You write the words, he says you leave out 3 words. Hu adinami, he might not mean 3 words. He might mean just leave out the lamed from le'enei kol Yisrael. Leave out the lamed. And then check the whole sefer, make sure you did a good job, fix up whatever needs to be fixed, etc. And then v'shom yan v'giyah kol sefer achar kach yivarech v'yichdov leinei kol Yisrael. Then you say baruch d'Hashem l'kein ha'melcholam asher gishon ha'zvanu al k'siva sefer Torah, and then you write leinei kol Yisrael, chazak chazak v'nis chazek. Right, good. So that's what you should do. The oz whom the mekayim mitzvah say maschav a gomer, right? Avolanias daiti ain kushizut srichel ifnim. Says, what's the real question? Why don't we make a bracha k'siva sefer Torah? It's pashut. I don't even need to look in any books. Ki ilu ayu chazal bekiin mechaseres v'yisera saw you misaknim bracha l'sefer Torah. Since already in the times of Chazal they were not full fledged experts in chaseres v'yiseros, so they never actually wrote a nusach for the bracha on a sefer Torah. Aval yan shehem atzvam lo yubikiyim kamavar bekidushin lamad amad aleph. They were bakiyim. We weren't even experts in the proper starting and stopping points of the psukim. I don't know if that's such a big kal v'chomer. You understand what he's saying? If we don't even know when to start and stop the psukim, so kal v'chomer, we don't know. One you can look at, one you can't look at. You could argue that it's the opposite. You could be a baki in chaseros v'yaseros and not be a baki in psukim. No, that's my point. Right, exactly. Exactly. He just thought it would be more pashut because, like, we would have a mesorah how to read the Torah versus how to write the Torah where you wouldn't be able to hear the difference. So, v'od, ika kamapam da mesorah poligashas. This is the part that really does not leave you warm, so warm and fuzzy inside. When the mesorah argues on the Gemara, what does that mean? Anybody know what that means? Sometimes, once in a while, you'll learn a Gemara, and it'll say, ah, because it's written and spelled this way, the halacha is like that. And then you open up a Sefer Torah, and it's written the other way. How did that happen? It happened because we have two different ways of poskening shilas, right? Because the halacha, we always follow the Mesorah when it comes to writing Sefer Torah. What is the Mesorah? There were certain Balei HaMesorah that collected manuscripts of Sifrei Torah, and based on their research, they decided what the correct nusach for the Sifrei Torah was going to be. Like the most popular, I think, is the Mincha Shai. Right? There was a Shita Mekubetzis, also a different Shita Mekubetzis, also has collections of manuscripts. But the Mincha Shai is the most popular, but there's a few others. And we would paskin based on the rove of the manuscripts, which ones were the correct ways to write a Sefer Torah. But once in a while, not very commonly, but once in a blue moon, the Mesorah and the Gemara learn differently. And our manuscripts match, one way, how you're supposed to write the word, and the halacha follows a different way. So we still paskin the halacha the way the Gemara has, but we write the Sefer Torah the way the Balei Mesorah have it. And therefore, you can't say that you're definitely writing, a kosher sefer Torah to the extent that you would make a bracha on it. Yeah.
Does this text in the Gemara date back further than the sefer Torah we're basing our mesorah on?
I don't know. Probably not.
Maybe we use the Gemara as a riot.
Yeah, I don't. They don't. For whatever reason, I don't know how they operate exactly, but they don't. They don't care what it says in the Gemara. Yeah.
The Gemara is further back, so that's probably more accurate.
Right, so I don't know that to be the case, but for example, there was a whole thing, I don't know, it started about 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, the Aleppo Codex controversy, right? So, I don't know, they made a coffee table book out of it, I think. So I'm not joking, like, not the controversy, but the Aleppo Codex, they found, the Rambam in Hilchos Sefer Torah writes that, yeah, you want to say? Right, but the scholars were working hard on it, and once they came to a certain maskanas, they still haven't, it's not muskum, and they're missing the vast majority of Tanakh. But the Rambam in Hilchos Sefer Torah writes that he heard that there is a Tanakh that was written by the hand of Ezra Sofer, and he's going to travel to find that Tanakh, and he's going to base all of his Hilchos Sefer Torah on that. On the way the Tanakh is written. Tanakh was not, it wasn't printed like our Tanakh, sorry. It was written as a scroll, as a Sefer Torah, and he paskins all of Hilchos Sefer Torah, and some of the things, especially the way we write Az Yashir and things like that, we don't write it the way the Rambam suggests we should write it. We write it differently. But if you look, apparently the scholars who were working on the Aleppo Codex, many of them came to the conclusion that this is the actual work that the Rambam was looking at when he wrote it, and apparently it had an authentic Mesorah dating all the way back to Ezra Sofer. So a lot of the manuscripts that exist maybe now don't date that far back, but they date back farther than the Gemara. So it's not necessarily true that the manuscripts that the Balei Mesorah use are newer than the Gemara. The Gemara might be, based on other manuscripts or based on what was popular that those Amoraim were using. But it doesn't necessarily mean that, I don't know, it's hard to, I'm not any kind of scholar, certainly not in this area, to know. So, that's a good question. So where are we holding by how to treat a Sefer Torah? I mean, it's a strange Mimonoshach, right? Strange Mimonoshach. On one end, we say we're not going to make a bracha because we're not writing the Sefer Torah correctly. On the other hand, we make a bracha every time we go up to read from the Torah. You hear the kasha? It's very strange, no? So that's a very difficult question. Anybody have any suggestions for why we do that? Yeah.
You read the Torah most of the time, it's going to be right. There aren't that many mistakes. But if you have to make a bracha on the whole Torah, it's not all correct.
Oh, you hear? Very good answer. She's saying, because to make a bracha, there's a lot. It's enough of a sveik sveika, basically. It's enough of a sveik sveika to allow you to make a bracha, because even if you say, number one, you can even say Sefer Torah that's missing a letter is still kosher. Number two, even if it's missing a letter in a different chumash, or it's missing a letter in a different a different area of parchment, might be that this area is kosher. So you have enough to be somechan, to say that there's an excellent chance that what I'm reading right now is absolutely kosher, and therefore, you can rely on a sveik sveika that you can make the bracha. However, the only downside with that theory is we never differentiate, meaning there is a difference in Petsua Daka, for example, between Ashkenazi Sefer Torah and Sephardi Sefer Torah. So if you were going to read that part of the Torah, so maybe that section you for sure shouldn't make a bracha, because you have a 50-50 shot. Now you could still say it's sveik sveika. In 50-50 shot, maybe even though it's spelled wrong, Sefer Torah is still kosher. Even if the Sefer Torah with spelled wrong is puzzle, maybe it's spelled right. So that's a possibility. Yeah.
The only issue is, I think, if it's like you hold the brachos on the chesed of Torah, so then you're not having a chesed of Torah.
No, that's not brachos of Torah when you get an aliyah. Brachos of Torah when you get an aliyah is on the mitzvah midrabbanan of kriyas haTorah.
It's on the mitzvah midrabbanan. The rabbi said, even though we don't have the accurate text on the.
No, line, but if you would take out a puzzle Sefer Torah, everybody would tell you you're for sure making a bracha levatol.
I'm not sure how it works out historically, but when the rabbis made the institution of laning, weren't they already aware that they were missing certain things in the Torah?
I don't think so. Moshe Rabbeinu, I think, made the institution, the original rabbi. So, yeah. Yeah. I think that's a correct answer as well. I like that answer very much. It basically, just to give it a more lumdisha sound, there's a difference between being koveya the nusach haTorah versus the mitzvah kriyas haTorah. What do I mean by that? When you're trying to create a chefetz of a sefer Torah, everything you do has to be beyond reproach. The mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah means to write what the Torah defines is a kosher Sefer Torah. You hear? So therefore, you have no right to take any shortcuts or be somech on anything less than the absolute correct spelling of every letter. And since anan lo bakin, you can't make a bracha when you write a Sefer Torah because you don't know that the creation that you're making is actually a Sefer Torah. So you don't know that you're mekayim the mitzvah. But on the other hand, when you read a Sefer Torah, what is the mitzvah there? The mitzvah is to read something which, for whatever reason, based on your mesorah, your koveya is a Sefer Torah. Saying once it's already been nikba, this is what we call a Sefer Torah, to read from that is the mitzvah of Kriya Sefer Torah. And therefore, you're allowed to make a bracha on that mitzvah, even if you know that the Torah that you're reading from is not correct when it comes to chaseris v'yaseris. You hear the difference? So I once used this idea to explain a very strange comment from Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I did not explain it, but to disagree based on the Aruch HaShulchan. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has an interesting idea where he says you shouldn't add horseradish to your romaine lettuce when you eat maror. Again, you ever seen such a thing? A person will take what really constitutes a kazayas of romaine lettuce, and then since they feel guilty that they're not recreating many years of slavery and having your children killed by coughing a little bit, so they feel guilty, so they throw some horseradish on the top. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman says that's a very, very bad idea. Right? Even though, if you look, the Aruch HaShulchan says it's a very good idea. But Rosh Shlomo Zalman has a whole theory why it's a bad idea. What's so bad about it? Because if you look in the Chayei Adam, he says, do we really know what any of these minim are? He says, we're not sure. He says, you look in the Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim, they give you, they tell you what they think they are. But the only ones that we really know what they are, there aren't any that we're 100% sure what they are. Some of them we think we know what they are, so the only two that we have any kind of chazaka for nowadays is romaine lettuce and horseradish. Right? So I think the Chacham Tzvi wants to suggest maybe endives. Chacham Tzvi says even horseradish is not right. But he says just you got to go romaine lettuce. He says, where'd the whole horseradish minute come from? He says, because in the climates that they live, they didn't have romaine lettuce. But you have to use lettuce. He says the horseradish he's not convinced is good at all. So what do we use? So the Chayei Adam says, listen, we're not sure, so we have a suffix, so just use either romaine lettuce or horseradish. So Shlomo Zalman says, now let's just do some math. You're going to take the horseradish, you can eat a kazayas of that. Were you yotze? Let's just, for argument's sake, say 50-50 chance you were yotze. Right? Then you're going to take the, or your other option, you're going to take romaine lettuce and eat that. Were you yotze? 50-50 chance. But if you take the romaine lettuce and mix it with the horseradish, even if you have a full kazayas of each, now what are your statistical chances you were yotze? Worse than before. Why? Because there's a concept called mitzvos mevat lazuazu, and certainly, if there's, let's say, for example, if there's a mitzvah d'oraisa mixed with a mitzvah d'rabbanon, the mitzvah d'rabbanon nullifies the mitzvah d'oraisa. It's like the way I explained it, we did it this year in yeshiva, so I explained it to my 12th graders. I said, sometimes you could be the coolest guy in the world, but if you're walking down Central Avenue with the biggest nerd in the world, nobody cares how cool you are anymore. Like, you lose everything. You lose all your street cred, right? So, and just the opposite. If you're the biggest loser in the world and you walk down the street with the coolest guy in the world, so you get elevated, but this guy gets brought down. So the Nimshol is obvious that if you have, let's say, that the Gemara says it by matzah b'zmanazez deraisa and morah b'zmanazez derabbanan, so you can't eat the matzah and the morah together, even according to Hillel. Right? Because Hillel was only saying his thing when it was all deraisa. But nowadays, that matzah is deraisa and morah is derabbanan, the morah, the flavor of the morah, is going to nullify the flavor of the matzah. Right, so therefore, the only thing that will persist is the derabbanan, and kol shekein advar reshus. That's also the basis of the machlokas. Do you dip korich into charoses or not? It's always one of the big sveikas at every seder. Do you dip the korich into charoses? Do you not? And one uncle is swearing up and down. In daddy's house, we always dip the charoses. And I was like, we never dipped. What are you talking? You were sleeping. You don't know what. Right, everybody's always debating. You know, so. What's the basis for it? So the question is there still a mitzvah of charosis, or were you already yotze when you dipped the mar into charosis? And now the charos is like a dvar reshus, and it's going to be mevatel the whole thing. So, okay, anyway, that's the concept of the mitzvah of mevatel lazuzu. So Shlomo Zalman says, what are you going to do? You're going to take your romaine lettuce, 50-50 chance if that's right. Now you're going to take your horseradish, put some on top. Now, what did you just do? What are the chances you're yotze the mitzvah now? Zero. Zero? Not zero. You had a 50-50 chance with each one. You knocked it down to a 25% chance.
Only if they both
are right. Right. If both are right, so it's 50-50 that both are right for each single one. But it's only 25-75 that they're both right. Is that true? My math is skills are non-existent. But I think it's considered a 25% chance that you're Yotze at all now. So that's why he says, just eat one or the other. Or if you're super frum, eat a kezias of one, and then eat a kezias of the other. But don't eat them together. Right? So, the Aruch HaShulchan says, it's such a minig yafe, it's lovely, and there are many, many great Rabbanim over the years who did do this. So what do they hold? So you could argue that they hold, like we're saying with the Chasam Sofer, by Ksiva Sefer Torah. I said, no. There's two different inyanim. There's to be koveya, what is a proper min for morrow? What's a proper min for morrow? So we're not sure. So using whatever tools we have at our disposal, we sit and we are koveya that horseradish is good and Roman lettuce is good. Are we sure? We're not sure. So how do we ever make a bracha? We don't make a bracha on 50-50 chances. Because the answer is that they're two different inyanim. There's the inyan of being koveya, what is the correct min for maror? And then there's the inyan to eat that thing. So when it comes to being koveya, what is maror? You're right, we're koveya at misafik. But what is the mitzvah of achilas maror? The mitzvah of achilas maror is to take whatever you have been koveya, no matter how you were koveya it, and to eat that. So you're vadai fulfilling the mitzvah of achilas maror. So too here. The mitzvah of being koveya, what is a kosher sefer Torah, that we don't know if we're doing it right. So we don't make a bracha. But the mitzvah of kriyas haTorah is to take whatever you were koveya as a kosher sefer Torah based on your mesorah and to read from that. So that we do know that we're getting it right. And that's why if you know there's a mistake from our style sefer Torah, you don't read from the sefer Torah lechatchila and you don't make a bracha from it. But if it's a correct Sefer Torah, according to our way of writing, you would make a bracha on it, even though you wouldn't make a bracha when you write it. You hear the difference? Okay. Fine, let's move a little further. Yeah?
If it's easy, why should it be based on tradition? Why should it be based on actuality? Why is it like the writing? Why would you be assuming the writing has to be done exact, and the reading has to be something that's not exact?
Because the writing is, that's what the mitzvah is. The writing of the Sefer Torah is to create what is called a kosher Sefer Torah. So by definition, if you can't swear that you're creating a kosher Sefer Torah, you can't be supremely confident that you fulfilled the mitzvah. But the mitzvah of Kriyas haTorah is not necessarily to do that. The mitzvah of Kriyas haTorah is to read from a Torah that was written to the best of your ability.
Are you saying because like what the reading is like a Talmud Torah thing?
It's Talmud. That's what the mitzvah is.
Because you are gaining Torah. You're inevitably going to gain Torah from there, despite.
No. It's not about gaining Torah. The mitzvah is, it's a public mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It's a mitzvah. It's Talmud Torah the Yochin and Talmud Torah the Rabbin. Right. So the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That's why we make a separate Birch Satorah on it, because it's a new mitzvah. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah the Yochin, you make a Birch Satorah usually once a day in the morning. Right, so but Talmud Torah Derabim, even though you made Birchas HaTorah already, you're going to make a new Birchas HaTorah on a separate, unrelated mitzvah when you go up to the Torah.
Right.
But that mitzvah, what is the mitzvah? Is the mitzvah dafka to read any Torah? No, you have to read from a kosher sefer Torah. But how do you define kosher sefer Torah for the purposes of that mitzvah? The answer is whatever your tradition dictates is a kosher sefer Torah is viable for the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. Mashenke for the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, it's not viable because there you're being koveya what is called a kosher Sefer Torah. And if you can't say beyond any reasonable doubt that this is a kosher Sefer Torah, you can't say, oh, I'm doing the mitzvah for sure. But by Kriyas HaTorah, you could say, I'm definitely doing the mitzvah. Kolzman, I don't find a mistake in the Torah. So that's the difference. And then Chaschinuch has a nicer, a little bit warmer and fuzzier view. And he basically says that he doesn't like the Shagas Aryeh's way of learning it. He says, how could it be that we lost the traditions of Chaseris V'Yaseris? It's such a bad job by us. You know, he says, how could it be? So he suggests it's not really as bad as you think. There's two different types of Chaseris V'Yaseris. There is Chaseris V'Yaseris where we darshan, and we learn out different halachos from that. And there's Chaseris V'Yaseris that we never darshan. And we don't learn out any different halachos. Right? Anybody get a chance to read it? If you get a chance, check it out. It's a pretty easy read. And he says that the chaseros v'yaseros that change the meaning or add on a different halacha. For example, he keeps giving the example of yeshem lemikra, yeshem lemasoros. So he says you can't say that as the Tanoim and Amoraim are arguing yeshem lemikra, yeshem lemasoros. So it says how many walls do you have for a sukkah? Well, if you hold yeshem lemikra, you have to have this many walls. If you hold yeshem lemasoros, and it depends how it's spelled in the Torah. Does it depend how it's spelled in the Torah? Does it depend how you read it? So what are we arguing about? Maybe the way it's spelled is not meduyuk anyway. So the answer is no. Clearly, for the ones that we were makbid to darshan, we knew exactly where every yud went and every vav went. There's no question. It says, from the ones that the Tanoim never darshaned, so then there was no mitzvah to... They were not as meduyuk because they weren't always remembering the drushas that they had. And therefore, a Sefer Torah that you write that's not correct, but chaseris v'yaseris, can't be incorrect from the drushes that we make. It can only be incorrect in the chaseris yaseris in the ones that don't matter lahalacha, the ones that we don't change any drushes from. But if there's a yadua drusha where the Sefer Torah is written incorrectly, then we are makbid. And even, I think he's saying this even within the Ramah. Even within the Ramah, you would have to put away the Sefer Torah if you knew the word basukos, for example, was spelled male or chaser, depending on the situation. So you would have to put away the Sefer Torah under those circumstances. Masha'en Kain, if it was just the name Aharon, so you wouldn't have to put away the Sefer Torah under those circumstances. That's his chilik that he draws. That's why I said there's about 2.5 sheets here. So again, let's just quickly review. See, the Ramah and the Magen Avraham said you don't have to put away the Sefer Torah if it's just chaseros for yaseros. But the Magen Avraham just added, but if it changes the word, then you do have to put it away, even if it doesn't change the meaning of the word. Shagas Aryeh says that's why there's no mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah b'zman hazeh. And both the Chasam Sofer and Minchas Chinuch argue on the Shagas Aryeh, and they say no, there is a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah b'zman hazeh for one of two reasons: either because it's our job to do our best, just we wouldn't make a bracha on it. Right? And I just mentioned Rav Moshe says you still have a suffik deraisa l'chumra to do it. But anyway, you have that way of looking at it. Just don't make a bracha. And the Minchas Chinuch's way of looking at it is that our Sifrei Torah are 100% kosher because we didn't leave out any of the chaseris yaseris that actually mattered. We just left out the chaseris yaseris that didn't quote unquote matter. Now, don't get me wrong. We would love to have a more meduyuk Sefer Torah, but it's still a 100% viable halachic Sefer Torah based on the lack of chaseris yaseris that we no longer have. Okay. Just a couple of more ha'aras. We had the Gemara saying, "Atana Rabbanim v'shinantem shi'divrei Torah mechudadim v'fichashim yishal l'cha adam davar al tegamgeim v'tomar lo." Right? How do you translate the word "al tegamgeim v'tomar lo"? Don't fumble. Don't hem and haw. Right? I don't think anybody uses that phrase anymore. But don't be like, "Ah, yeah, I'm not sure." Right? No, got to say it to Emor lo miyad, shenemar emor lo chochma, achosi at. Right? What does it mean, emor lo chochma, achosi at? I always thought this Rashi was shelo kipshuto. Right? If I would have said, what do you learn from? You had to know your Torah. Right? Emor lo chochma, achosi at. So you say, just like you know your sister, you know the Torah. Right? It doesn't say no. Every din should be as poshut to you as the fact that your sister, you're not allowed to marry your sister. Okay. That's how Rashi wants to learn it. Maybe in Rashi's time, brothers and sisters didn't know each other so well. I don't know, but either way, the Tosfos over here raises a very popular issue. He says, "Wait a second! There were three times because anybody know what the sugi is going on over there that Tosfos is referencing? Did anybody see the Tosfos? Yeah. So Tosfos references the Gemara Bava Metzia. Gemara Bava Metzia says that we always trust a tzur b'mirabanan with a tevius ayin." If a Talmud Chacham says to you, "That's my mitzia," right? You say you don't have to. He doesn't have to bring a siman. You can trust him with a tvias ayin. He says, "I know for a fact that that's mine." You're allowed to believe him. Why? Because we have a chazaka that Talmidei Chachamim only lie about three things. What are the three things that they lie about? Sechta, Ushpiza, and Puraya. So great. What's that? Right. So. So Masechta, that's the one that's relevant to us. Let's explain that one first. Right? Masechta means if you ask him, did you learn this Masechta? He's allowed to lie and say, nah, I never learned it. Even though he did. Why? Because what are you asking these stupid questions for? Right? It goes along the line, the phrase, a stupid question gets a stupid answer. Right? So saying, why do you ask me ridiculous questions? You want to see, oh, is he a Bucky and Kutchum? Is he not a Bucky and Kutchum? I'm not a Bucky and Kutchum, okay? Didn't you write like 10 Svarim on Kutchum? All right, fine, I'm a Bucky and Kutchum. Right? So the whatever it is, why are you asking me these questions? So Tosla says there's a big difference. Rabbeinu Tam says that there's a big difference between someone who actually asks a question because he wants to know the answer and someone who just wants to be a regular yeshiva bacher and hack about how brilliant his Rebbe is. You know, so like if the guy's asking you, oh, are you a Bucky and Kutchum, just so he could check it off his list of things that are impressive about you, so you could say, nah, I'm not. Right? But if he says, I have a question about a halacha that's related to Kutchum, so you got to tell him right away. What's the answer? If he wants to know the Torah, you got to teach him Torah right away. Don't be modest. If he wants to just stam, see where you're holding, so you can pretend you're not holding. That's Masechta. Right? What are the other two? Ushpiza is a weird one. Ushpiza is like to prevent freeloaders. Right? If somebody says, oh, you ate at so-and-so's house, how was the food? So even though the food was out of this world, you're allowed to say, oh, it's okay. You know, not bad. Pretty standard. Right. Right. So you're saying like we don't want freeloaders coming by to now everybody wants to be his friend so they get invited for Shabbos lunch so they could get a good meal out of the deal. No, he says in those days, meaning other people lie all the time. What they meant is that Talmid Chachamim, who were actually careful not to lie, would still lie about these three things. That was the point. Nobody should lie. Everyone's allowed to lie about these three things, and no one should lie. But Lamaisa, people lie, and at the time, Surba Mirabana didn't lie about anything besides these three things. Anyway, so that was the second one. And Puraya is an interesting one as well. Puraya could be referencing a bed. It's an Aramaic word for bed. So if some nudnik says to a Talmud Chacham, were you yotze the mitzvah of Ona last night? Did you do Tashmish Amita? So you're allowed to say, no, I didn't. And or like the more common way to look at it is a woman is allowed to make up a story to say where she's going, even though she's really going to the mikveh. Right? You guys aware of this? Women don't advertise when they're going to the mikveh. Why don't they advertise when they're going to the mikveh? Is it something dirty about going to the mikveh? There's nothing dirty about going to the mikveh. It's because there's a mitzvah of ona dafka b'leil tevila more so than on other nights. And therefore, when a woman says, I'm going to the mikveh, she's also saying, I'm going to be living with my husband tonight as well. So that's why they don't advertise when they're going to the mikveh. So you're allowed to lie and say, I'm going to a party or whatever. I'm going somewhere to visit a friend when you're really going to the mikveh. So that's what it means, puraya. However, the Marsha has a very cute shot here. The Marsha, the Shitasa, was not very pro-drinking. So he says, what's the pshat? He says, it says the word puraya where? In the Gemara, right? Wiser, help me out here. Chayav inish libisume bipuraya. Adelo yada bin orham lebarach Mordechai. So he says, if you're a Talmud Chacham and everyone's like, chug, 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 chug. So you're allowed to lie and say you're holding by Adelo yada already, even though you're not. That's the third time that Talmid Chacham are allowed to lie. They're allowed to lie on Purim and pretend they're drunker than they really are. So that's the third time. Because that's Lashitaso, that's why the next line in the Gemara is the famous Kam Rabba of a Shachte L'Reb Zeira. So the Marshal says, what's the pshat? He shechted him. Says, what kind of a chai is he? Like, I don't know. I've been drunk before. I never killed anybody. Right? Rabba is such a chai that he's killing people when he's drunk. So what's the pshat? He says it was alcohol poisoning. That's what he says it was. It was alcohol poisoning. He had to go to Hatzolah to get his stomach pumped. So he was mamish holding by death's door, and he davened for him, and he had a real tchias amesim. He was holding by being a goses already, and Rabba davened for him, and he had a refuah shleim. So that's what it meant. So you see, the Marsha was not so pro drinking, certainly not large amounts on Purim. But he says that's a pshat in Puraya that you're not supposed to drink so much. You're allowed to lie and say I'm already holding by Adelo Yoda, even if you're not. Anyway, those are the three things that the Gemara in Bava Metzia says. Just to go a little further, so there's a Ran in the Darm, right? Why do people quote so many Rans in the Darm? Because on the Daf, Rashi is not Rashi. Tosfos is Tosfos, but without Rashi, Tosfos is not Tosfos, right? And the Ran is on the Daf where Tosfos should be. So the Ran, some people don't learn Rashi at all on the Darm. Some people learn it; they call it the Mefarish or whatever they want to call it, right? But the Ran is the Iker Perish on Maseches Nedarim, and the Ran in the Darm is going on the Gemara there where it says that, let's say a guy says, I'm taking a shvua that I'm going to get up early and learn Daf Yomi today, right? I'm going to learn this parak, I'm going to learn whatever. So then the guy, it's considered a real shvua. So the Gemara asks, he's mushba v'omed mehar Sinai. He's already holding by the chiyuv to learn Torah from our Sinai. And the rule is a shvua can't take effect on another shvua. So how can the shvua be effective? So the Gemara answers, no, because he could have patered himself with Kriyas Shema Shel Shachris and Kriyas Shema Shel Arvis. So on that Gemara, the Ran jumps in and says, what are you talking about? You can't patter yourself from Talmud Torah with Kriyas Shema Shel Shachris, Kriyas Shema Shel Arvis. What about Vishinantam Levanecha? Shiyu Divrei Torah Mechudadim Mefecha. You have a chiyuv to learn more than that. You have to learn as much as you can. Megisa V'yom HaMalayla, as much as possible. Kafi Yecholto. You have to try to learn as much as you can to become an expert in Torah. So the Ran has to give a different teretz, where the Ran says, you see that the concept of ein shvua chal al shvua is only when it's mefurish in the Torah. So since it's not mefurish in the Torah, v'shinantam levanecha doesn't mean that you have to be an expert in Torah per se. So therefore, it's not, the shvua is still chal on it, right? But if it would be explicit in the Torah, it would not be chal, because the ikar chiyuv of Talmud Torah is to learn ad kadei kach that you become an expert in Torah. But if you look in the Mefarish in the Dharma, and you look in Tulsus in the Dharma, it's not mashma that way. They seem to say, like we said when we were learning Menachos, that the ikar mitzvah is fulfilled when it comes to kriyash mashal shachas v'shal arvis. And then the vishinantam levanecha is an additional kiyum. It's not the same thing. So they seem to learn differently than the Ran. There's more you could say on it, but basically it seems like the Ran is saying that Vishinantam Lamanecha is a description in the mitzvah of the Lumadat Mosam Espenechem, how you should learn. And the Mefarish and Tosfos over there are learning that no, there's really two separate inyanim. There's the time spent learning, and then there's the mitzvah of knowing stuff, knowing the Torah, so that you can't fulfill with just the Kriyas Shema Shachar and Shalar. You're not going to know anything. So therefore you have to try to learn more. But they say that that's why the Shavuot would still be chal in it. Okay, there's more to say. Check out the Turi Evin if you want in your spare time over Shabbos or something, and we'll talk. Be'ezra Hashem, Sunday, we're going to move on to the Kibbutz Avim Sugyas, starting on the bottom of Laminam and base. Okay. Amen.